Drew Barrymore, thanks so much for taking the time to join us here on WTOP. We know you're a busy woman, so we really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. I feel the same way. I appreciate it.
Okay, well, everyone knows that you were sort of, you know, born into Hollywood royalty, and we all know and love all of your flicks. But why put pen to paper here and tell it in your own words? I think it'll be a good stocking stuffer, if you ask me.
Oh, good. I think it's a very optimistic book, so I like optimism, especially during the holidays. And therefore, I think it is a nice holiday book because it's cheerful. It surprised me writing it that I actually was like crying as I was typing too. It's emotional, but I also was laughing all the way through it. And I always wanted to write. It was always sort of this dream or goal of mine, but I just did not have the organized time, the bravery, and probably enough life experience, which
right.
I to feel like I had something to say or even perspective on my life,
right?
Like humorous objectivity. And it's very personal. It's my heart on a page, and yet it doesn't cross any boundaries and become anything that I wouldn't want my children to read. It actually turned out to be a total love letter to them.
Absolutely. Well, what you mentioned that certain parts made you tear up, and which parts made you get a little misty-eyed?
Yeah, writing about my dog, Flossie, and like the 17 almost years we had together was incredibly emotional. And one of the stories I sort of had in the lighter category, I didn't realize, writing about my dad and writing about my mother's father and sitting in a Hawaiian hotel room with him and, things that sort of came out of nowhere and made me realize that they were a lot more profound to me than I had even realized. Writing about my best friend, Nancy Javonin, who's a Taurus, and my mother is a Taurus, and my daughter, Frankie, is a Taurus. And although I don't put a ton of stock in the whole astrology thing, it was a great literary way for me to, like, talk about these women in
right.
my life.
Is that sort of like a through line?
Yeah. So I tried to have heads and tails of stories that would help give it a setting, but then also take you where maybe I didn't even expect it to go. I tried to write clear and concise, but I also tried to keep it unobvious and not just so paint by the numbers. It was such a pleasure to write. It came effortlessly, even though I put so much effort into it. Something about it didn't feel, like, oh, God, I got to go write again. I like ran to the typewriter,
you know,
3 days a week for 2 hours a day. And I got to be the kind of mom that I want to be, which is with my kids. And instead of a job taking me so far away from them, it didn't. I wrote it at my house, and it was, like, perfectly conducive.
Yeah.
It was great.
That's awesome. You mentioned your father. I know you devote part of the book with your relationship with you and your dad, but you said it was sort of in small doses, memorable moments, sometimes dark, sometimes humorous.
I mean, he was just such an unreliable, hilarious, tornado. of a person. I think I equated him to part unicorn, part violent storm. and that's what he was. It was very tumultuous and sometimes, honestly, just downright scary. And as you get older, you get out of your fear and more into like a equal footing with
right.
this person. And then by the end, he was unfortunately dying of cancer. It was like all of a sudden I was the bigger, stronger person.
Right.
And it's funny how our whole relationship went full circle. And I found him really fascinating. And I didn't hold him accountable for not being an accountable person. And there was a tremendous amount of forgiveness and understanding that we had between each other, which, father to daughter who don't have a healthy orthodox relationship can really go the other way. And ours didn't. It was very appreciating.
Absolutely. In addition to your father, there was obviously also Ethel Barrymore, and then you're the grandniece of Lionel Barrymore?
Yes.
Mr. Potter, yes. Very, very timely this time of year. Do you have any memories of Lionel Barrymore? And
Christmas movie in the world, It's a Wonderful Life.
I agree with you. When was the first time, did he sit you down and show you that, or how does that even work when he's actually your granduncle?
I know. Unfortunately, I wish he was the one who turned it on for me. I just saw it when I was a really little kid and loved it so much. And it was probably my mom that showed it to me. I didn't really know any of them because they all passed away before I was born. Only knew my father.
Okay.
I know. So I just, luckily, you know, they left me this treasure box of books and movies and all these wonderful ways to connect with them, albums with their voices on it.
But
I have to idealize them from afar, although I feel so close and connected with them. Funny how the spiritual world works.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, most people out there in the world don't get to have those awesome, quote-unquote, home movies that you get to have, you know. It's pretty special.
Yeah, it's a decent trade-off because I would have much preferred to, like, have Christmases with them and all that good stuff, but I'll take it.
for sure, definitely. I know also in the book there's a part called, you know, there's a whole part, School of E.T., which is also timely because, you know, the great screenwriter just passed away of the movie. But
I know.
Do you know
Melissa Matheson.
Yeah. Do you have any memories of her and also just, or Mr. Spielberg, how you got into it? You auditioned for Poltergeist, right? And that led to E.T.?
I did. I was just a kid actor going out on, you know, auditions and trying to land jobs. And he was sitting in for the director of that film, and he told me I was not right for this part. I was crushed. I thought I had, like, really won him over with my crazy stories, 6-year-old's imagination. And luckily, he said, I'm making another movie. It's called A Boy's Life, and I'd like you to come in and meet on that one. And I, through many auditions, ended up getting that part and having, honestly, what was just the most joyous experience of my life. And then they changed the film's name after we made it and called it E.T.
Do you have any fond memories of, you know, I mean, because you're all sort of kids at the time, but the boy that played Elliot.
Yeah, Henry Thomas.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we all had the best time. We all went to school. I called it the School of E.T. because we all went to school together every day in this little schoolhouse. It was on this old Hollywood lot that had a very bungalow-like feeling, very old Hollywood. And
yeah,
we were in this little tiny schoolhouse, and we just had so much fun together. It was a real group of misfits, and everybody felt very empowered by Stephen, and, you know, imaginations were allowed to run wild. And it was such a healthy, safe, lovely environment. It really was one of the best experiences of my whole life.
What is it like acting across, you know, sort of a cutting-edge puppetry like that? You know what I mean? I mean, it's how do you even act like that when it's not a real person like that? I mean, especially at such a young age.
Well, I have to say, I feel lucky because he was actually in the room, and I feel like now you'd be acting to a green screen and a tennis ball.
True.
And to be filled in later. So I actually miss the era of when, like, puppetry existed,
right,
and things were actually live on camera.
For sure.
I mean, it's amazing what they can do nowadays. So, look, here we are. We're only moving forward and better. But I kind of like kicking it old school with some puppetry.
I'm kind of with you. It gives a little more soul to it because it's actually there.
It is. It's right on the film slide.
The most important E.T. question. Did you, all the kids on set, ever eat Reese's Pieces?
Oh, yeah, we did. They were always around.
Awesome. Well, speaking, I know, I've always wondered that. You know, he's leaving little trails for E.T.
Totally. They were always on set. Yes, we definitely nibbled a few here and there.
Those are your Hansel and Gretel breadcrumbs around set.
Exactly.
we talked about, you know, the passing of, you know, E.T. screenwriter, but we also had another timely recent passing of, you know, the great Wes Craven, and you worked with him in Scream. What are some of the memories of that
and
opening scene?
A wonderful man. Yes, I have very strong memories of working with him, and Harvey Weinstein and I were really passionate about him doing the film because we were like, hello, Nightmare on Elm Street. It had been at least 10 years since he did that. And he's such a master. And we thought, oh, we really want this film to become, you know, something that can go on and on and on. If we could ever be so lucky to work with a master, it might reach that potential. And so I worked really closely with him. And then when I was doing my, 8 days of filming for the beginning part of the film, I was so close to him. And I actually, told him the secret that if he told it to me, I empowered him with this information that he could use, because I didn't want to use any fake tears. I wanted to be crying. I don't ever like to resort to glycerin running down my face. I'm going to have to cry for 8 days straight. So let me tell you this thing. And so he would tell it back to me, and it always got me to cry.
What's the secret? And are you allowed to say?
I'll just keep it between us. But it's nothing salacious or weird. It was this thing I heard that happened in the world that upset me so much.
Oh, wow.
It wasn't even my own story.
But only you and Wes Craven knew it.
Yeah, only we did.
Wow.
And I was always very close to him, because I didn't want to talk to people in between takes, because I had to be at such a sort of agitated, flipped out state. So I just stayed by his side. He was incredibly safe, and he was just the warmest, kindest, loveliest man. Funny how someone who's a king of a horror genre could be so gentle and so the opposite of what you would think he'd be.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, it might be hard to believe, but what Janet Leigh was to Psycho back in the 60s, you were to all of us in the 90s. You're the Janet Leigh of Scream.
I am honored by the reference. Honored.
Awesome. Well, I know you got to make the rounds here, so I wish we could talk forever, but we got to let you go. But the book is called Wildflower. Any final words of why we should, pick this up, maybe buy it for someone over the holidays?
Well, I mean, I think going back to, what we first started saying, it is a cheerful, optimistic book, and hopefully surprisingly emotional here and there. But I think I wrote it with this feeling of such warmth. And I think that's what you want and need around the holidays. You need to be enveloped in warmth.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for enveloping us for at least, 10 or 15 minutes. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
We really appreciate you. Are you kidding me? Okay. Everybody, that's Drew Barrymore on WTOP. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you.